It's a very interesting job, isn't it, John? Because like you, he comes in just at the point where you combine those two things you've got, that interest in music and the electronics at the same time. And I was often wondering whether he would ever get a job that would do both your abilities. And it's amazing, it's a real late 20th century job, because they absolutely need this in the big orchestras now, because there's so many electronic components in musical scores. So John is in great demand. And he also is co-founder of the group called Electric Phoenix, where the singers, in fact, have their voices changed electronically in performance by themselves and by John. I think that's the best way of putting it.
When I'm asked publicly how I got into this line of work, my answer is an American story about a man who goes into into a house of ill repute and goes to is assigned to his room, and there above the wall is a PhD from Harvard in philology. And he looks up and says, "Is that yours?" And he said, "Well, of course it's mine." "You mean you earned it?" "Well, yes, naturally." "Well, how'd you ever get into a line of work like this?" She shrugs her shoulders and says, "I don't know, just lucky, I guess."
Yeah, right. What a beastly comment on the academic world. True. Did you get that list last time? Gilbert?
Yeah.
We were just wondering about how you were getting on with your, what was it, the words you used? About these enormous masterpieces, or some such word like that, in your thesis.
It's finished.
I was just saying it's finished. Everybody might have relieved. For you, I guess. You got one of those last time, I think, didn't you?
Yeah,
I remember.
I'm just saving this for a client.
Oh, he couldn't come. Never mind, yeah.
A bit more electronics in here.
Is this a battery model?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they might be monitoring this down in the boiler room. Charging me up with the electronics. Is tell us when you're ready. No, it doesn't. Don't do that, because don't worry about that. I just want to announce to everybody what the scheme of things is. What we've been doing for the last, how many years? It's been about 4 or 5 years.
I think, yeah.
We've been having these very cultural studies control sessions. I don't know what to call them. I call them sessions. And the basic idea is to take certain very important critics or critical ideas and go through them pretty steadily and build up some kind of discourse between ourselves. In certain areas. Let me give you an idea practically. This last year, we started off with some of Michel Foucault's ideas to do with the care of the self, and moved into books by Paul Virilio to do with speed and accelerations inside cultures. And that was our year's work. The year before that, we did almost all the works of Roland Barthes, examining what the significations were there. In other years, we looked at people like Jean Baudrillard and the concept of the gift we looked at in Marcel Mauss and others. It's just generally keeping ourselves alert as students to current ideas and to keeping levels of investigation going, which, well, I'm going to speak very personally about, I find very, very important to me to do it with other people. And I know that many graduate students don't have much opportunity to do it anywhere else. In a group like this, do you see that? Because it's very difficult, is it not? And we've discussed this before, to find some kind of place to do your thinking. Do you know what I mean? Some site like that. Does it not? Yeah. It seems to be clear, is it not? Increasingly so, I guess. So that I've got a lot of, gained a lot of confidence with this personally. So and other people have been nice enough to say, and as you can see, all these tape recorders, it's nothing whatever to do with me, it's through the fact that people would like to be here and take part in this and can't be. So it mustn't just all pompous me recording me today. Except I've got to remember to press that. Oh, you're going to remember to press the button. Thank God, because I always forget to press the damn thing. I did it in the reading the other night. I didn't press the bloody button at the first reading. I just can't remember. It's awful. I'm just a stupid. Anyway, so but this year I thought I got, let me just give you the genesis of this if I've got the notes. Yes, I know what happened. I've got some materials down somewhere. Oh, here they are. Yes, there it is. Okay, we can start now if you want to press all these wretched buttons. What happened was this. I was talking to some people here who are here now and some people who are away about an alarm, perhaps it is, that some of us feel that the status of creativity in our society is being eroded by all sorts of simulations of creativity, by electronics, John. particularly with computerology and all sorts of ideas that somehow you can feed into a simulated nervous system enough information so that there will be something like a robotic imitation of human being which would increasingly take over. Having said this, of course, then it suddenly struck me, this is the enormous history of this. The sheer amount of literature there is on robotics, fantasies to do with substitute creativity, like Karel Čapek's play, R.U.R., do you remember what it was, Rossum's Universal Robots, where in fact the idea is that they will be better than human beings anyway, so let them get on with it. But could they generate themselves, to using a broad term for all kinds of generation in that particular way, if you see that, in terms of could they in fact simulate life like that? Then there's all this stuff to do with test tubing creativity of those kinds, as if that was enabled. I mean, it's not creativity at all, in actual fact, it's reproduction, which is a very different matter. And as you know, cloning and things like that are on the cards. People talk about this, all sorts of ways. So I wanted to separate the generative from the creative, you see, like that. But I think we'll think about that very seriously. So later on, I'm going to look at Alfred Korzybski. That's like K-O-R-Z-Y-B-S-K-I, Korzybski, great Chicago philosopher. And I want to separate off the difference between animal and man life as he gets it. And I was talking to you about this, Will, that testing it out with Will, because it seems to me to raise appalling issues to do with the overlap between animal total reproductiveness and non-creativity, and human, in the extreme case, of being creative and capable of making things new, which animals aren't. And that raises social issues of the most appalling kind, to do with differentiations inside the species, which are infernally difficult, particularly for socialists, who have to start out by saying all human beings are equally capable. And whether you believe that or not is on the cards. The other thing we have to do is to separate it out from evolution. That creativity is not evolution, or is it? Or is evolution slow creativity? Or is creativity speed up evolution? There are all these ideas around which are absolute murder to consider unless you do it very carefully and slowly. One of the people on your list there, at the top actually, Rupert Sheldrake. I've discovered, by the way, that a new science of life is in penguins. Has come out in Penguins, so you might want to look at that. He works at Clare College, Cambridge, and he is in fact a geneticist. And his books deal very much to do with this tussle between genetics, creativity, evolution, reproduction, all this area that you see here. And I was absolutely intrigued by the fact that at the end of his latest book, which is the first book on your list called Presence of the Past, Morphic Resonance and Habits of Nature, which I'll be going into later. His conclusion is that there is still something called creativity and it is still a mystery. Now this is from someone who spent a lifetime researching this area, that there's still something that we don't know about.